Welcome in the dark, everyone. Hope everyone's having a good day or evening, wherever they are. We have a really great guest tonight. Mr. D.A. Roberts is here with us. He is a retired police officer, and he's done many other types of, I think, jobs with security work and law enforcement. And he's turned into a cryptid investigator and, you know, other stuff like supernatural things. Really fascinating guy. So hope you enjoy the show, and let's get on with it. Are you there?
Yeah, now I hear you.
Wow. We haven't even gotten started, and it's already given us crap. I can't even believe this. Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, everything seems fine. Okay. Now.
That's crazy. Yeah, usually, I mean, you know, you run into this stuff now and then. Robin always teases me. I do a lot of episodes with Robin Haynes McCray, and she always jokes around with, you know, things are always out to get us and everything. So I don't know.
We always joke that every time we talked on our show about the Black Knight satellite in orbit, we would have technical glitches. So now anytime we have a technical glitch, somebody in the chat will say, must be the satellite.
It's just terrible. I can't believe there are some people. I mean, I tried to have this one guy on. He was an exorcist. He's a really famous exorcist. And I'm telling you, I couldn't even get past like three sentences. And this went on and on. And I used different devices and everything. I was like, I contacted Spotify. They said that they couldn't figure out what they didn't see anything on their end at all. And I was like, well, this is really weird. So anyway, so okay. I have some questions for you, and this is part of the reason I like to podcast. Some of the stuff, you know, you feel like you're kind of repeating stories a lot, you know, when you do podcast episodes but you find yourself, you know, you're having questions as you're listening to other people's podcasts when they have guests on. And I know that you were a retired law enforcement, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So do you concentrate more on the Bigfoot part of the, you know, the investigations that you do? Do you concentrate mostly on like the Bigfoot and I'd say maybe the dog men as well now too? Or do you also get into like the ETs and the spiritual hauntings and stuff like that?
I don't do ET stuff. I've just never really been that interested in UFOs. It's not that I don't believe they exist. I just really not that interested. Yeah. I have done haunting investigations. In fact, we just did one a couple of weeks ago. This Saturday show is going to be us talking about what we picked up. But I tend to do just about anything. And if we go out to a wooded area, I don't go out looking for one particular cryptid. I go looking for what I find. You know, be that dog man, be that Bigfoot, you know, it could be just about anything, because, you know, if you go out looking for one thing, you might miss clues that would lead you to something else. So when we go out to investigate an area, we're just doing an in general investigation. We're not, you know, going specifically looking for one thing or another.
Okay. Those are the people that fascinate me the most because they're not limiting themselves. Like you get a lot of people that are just really focused on one type of, you know, cryptid or, you know, entity, I guess is right. The best word to use. And my podcast was always about, you know, more along the lines of just a little bit of everything because I've had so many different experiences in my life. And, you know, mine started out with like supernatural hauntings and stuff because I grew up in a really, big old Victorian home. And I think that's what kind of opened me up to a lot of this stuff, you know? So, have you ever encountered, like, what have you actually had encounters with entities? Like, or is it just things that you see clues and, you know, you're kind of doing investigations on it, but have you actually encountered things?
Seen full body apparitions. When I worked as a head of overnight security for a local hospital, I was still a deputy at the time, but I was moonlighting at the hospital, running their overnight security shift. I spent almost an hour chasing a shadow figure on the mechanical floor. Turned out there was nobody on the floor but me. And because I could prove that because the only way in and out of the floor was with a magnetic badge and nobody accessed in or out but me that whole night. But I spent, you know, 45 minutes or almost an hour chasing a shadow figure on that floor. Saw him clear as day, but all I could see was it was a shadowy figure. So I have had paranormal experiences as well as cryptid stuff. But you spend enough time sticking your nose in where it doesn't belong, you're going to have experiences.
I know you are. Trust me. Well, mine kind of came to me, you know, naturally when I was a kid. And then it just kind of, you know, I've just had a whole lifetime of stuff and it's been absolutely crazy. I mean, it's been, I mean, I even saw a rake literally, well, what they would call a rake, I guess they're really called crawlers, literally walk or crawl right in front of my car when I was taking my daughter home one night in front of my car. It was just as clear as day. I mean, you couldn't mistake this for something else. It was right there in front of us. And we were both like, it was right down the road from where I live. And we were both stunned. And when somebody else sees it, that's when you know you're not nuts, you know? Right. Oh, that's, we were both like, you know, what in God's name was that? We were screaming and it was crazy. But we only saw the top torso and the head. We couldn't see the legs. Now, I'm not saying the legs weren't there, but they weren't in view. So you do believe in the supernatural part of life, though.
Absolutely.
Because, the reason I was asking is because when you were doing the one interview I was listening to you do, you had made a comment that you did not believe that Bigfoot and say dogmen possibly were not supernatural beings. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I can't honestly say either way what I really feel, because you hear so much and you can't really say you know for sure what it is, because you would sound stupid. But with that being said, when you base an opinion like that, and then you think about all the people that have had, you know, encounters with them, and like even the Indians and Native Americans and such, and they talk about like some of their supernatural abilities. I mean, what do you feel about that then?
Well, a lot of things that we once considered supernatural are now explainable in science. I think some of the things that people thought were supernatural are now coming to light as being more physical manifestations. For example, people that have claimed they've seen Bigfoot cloak. If you look at I can't remember the name, the Paul Freeman film. Paul Freeman captured footage of a large male black Sasquatch walking through the trees. And MK Davis has done a fantastic breakdown on this video. But as you watch the video, when it realizes he's watching, it stops in front of a pine tree and vanishes. It didn't turn invisible. It didn't go into another dimension. It didn't cloak. It has clear hair shafts, and more researchers are showing these, that when they find hair samples, they're finding hair samples that have a clear hair shaft, much like a polar bear. And clear hair shafts operate on the same principle as a fiber optic cable. And fiber optic cables are being used in the most latest generation of ghillie suits, because they absorb and redirect the color of light around them, which is exactly what that Sasquatch did. It stopped in front of that tree and absorbed the color around it, and it just seemed to disappear. It's adaptive camouflage, and a lot of animals have it.
Wow. Okay. I remember you talking about, was it a sea creature or was it a polar bear? Is that what you were referring to?
Polar bears have adaptive camouflage. There are lots of different animals in the ocean that have it. It's cuttlefish, for example, the chameleon does it, but it's not necessarily chromatophores. Which is what the chameleon has. It's not necessarily that. It's just those clear hair shafts. Those clear hair shafts, again, operate very much like a fiber optic cable. And if you put a clear hair shaft in front of a green plant, it's going to look green.
Right. So where do you think these beings, do you have any type of theory on their origins at all?
I think they're as old as we are. I really do. And I think what a lot of people consider to be the modern Bigfoot is probably some sort of Denisovian or Neanderthal. Because if you look at more recent explanations or explorations of Neanderthal DNA, Neanderthal weren't as much like us as we thought. If you look at the book Them and Us by Danny Vendramini, they did a forensic reconstruction of a Neanderthal skull, and the depiction that they brought out looks very much like a modern Bigfoot. It was very hairy. It was broader than us. It had had larger eyes because it was more nocturnal than we are. So a lot of these are the very same characteristics that you're finding in the modern Bigfoot. And when people say, well, you know, if you look at Danny Vendramini's, you'll find that, you know, the nose is different when people describe the way they saw it in Florida or this or that and the other. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can explain that by using modern animals that we already know about. The black bear, If you look at black bears from the East Coast and black bears from the West Coast, they're both black bears and they can interbreed, but they are very different. You can tell the difference out of them by looking at them. It's just regional adaptations. And I think what we've got is possibly a relic population of humanoid of some sort. It could be Neanderthal, it could be Denisovan, could be something we haven't even discovered yet. But I think what we have is a relic population with multiple adaptations around the country.
Wow, it's so funny you said the Neanderthal because there was a day, this was probably 2 years ago, that I was looking at just pictures of cavemen. I always call them cavemen, but and it occurred to me just out of the blue, and I hadn't even heard this yet, that how much they look like the Sasquatch, how the features resembled, and then I just had that epiphany moment where I was like, oh my God, what if this is, what if they took a Sasquatch and shaved it down, and this is actually what the Neanderthals are? I mean, what if that's what the Bigfoot are? And they, we've basically been told it's us, but or that we mutated from them, but we never did. That this is actually a different species of human. So I don't know. It's just so then where does that lead you into the government cover-ups? Like, how do you like what? Because I noticed like you were talking about your visits to the LBL, which I kind of wanted you to get into a little bit. But where, I mean, when you were at the LBL, or what was it called? The what was
In
the
between the
place that you
lakes.
were? Yeah, but there was another word for it, the Mummers Bay. I think that's what it was.
Demumbers Bay. It's Demumber.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I didn't know that. But you said that the people kind of clammed up when you were talking, and I know it's probably due to, it almost makes you feel like the government came in and shut them up, but it might be because of, they just need money from, vacationers
That
such that come
area
in.
thrives on the tourist economy. Those lakes are huge tourist draws. But a lot of the tourists don't go into LBL. It's more of a remote, it's easy to access, but still not a lot of a lot of people do it. But I think part of it is, preserving their way of life because they require those tourist dollars. I mean, I think a lot of it is, the federal government has put, has told people we shouldn't be talking about this. It's not what you think it is, this, that, and the other, telling people it's bears when you know dang good and well it isn't, that kind of thing.
Oh, I know. I know it drives me nuts because bears are my favorite animal, and I'm like, man, they get a bad rap, because
Bears can be
imagine.
dangerous.
I know, but you can't blame everything on bears.
Exactly. You can't blame
My
everything
God.
on wild dog attacks either. There are not
Yeah.
just thousands of packs of wild dogs roaming the camp, but the countryside attacking and killing people at random. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
Because I
Yeah.
can tell you, I'm a farm kid. If whenever we had wild dogs in the area, we shot them.
Yeah. Do you
Because
think?
like them taking down livestock gets expensive. So if you start
Oh.
noticing wild dogs in the area, you just staked out the field and you shot them. So I can't
Wow.
really believe that farmers aren't still doing that.
Yeah, you oh, definitely. I grew up on a farm too. It was funny. I had our farm was it was actually con I guess it was the eighth biggest farm in the United States when I was growing up, and we had they had everything there, but we had like this big Victorian mansion on a farm. It was really funny, so it was like made no sense because usually a farmhouse is on a farm, but ours was completely, it was just crazy. But so how do you feel about the government then? Like, what do you think the cover up is then from them?
I think it's, very similar to like the spotted owl. The government knows that once people find out those things are out there, we're going to have to divide our habitat with them. I mean, we can't force them out. To do so is genocide essentially. So I think the government doesn't want people to know about it because it's going to affect a lot of industries. It's going to bring them to a screaming halt. Plus, on top of that, you're going to get two reactions from people. Some people are going to want to go out and make friends with these things, and other people are going to want to hunt them. And with the bulk of the population refusing to believe they're even out there, they're safer than if you've got a bunch of armed rednecks wanting to go drag one into town.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I just feel like people are such sitting ducks in a way, not knowing that they're there. It's
Well, I
almost like
agree.
they're just being led to slaughter. I mean, they just it's almost like it's a, they're allowing people to be used as a food source just to kind of keep things at bay with them,
If you
and
look at the
it
missing 411, you can kind of
oh.
think they are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I follow David so much. I've actually talked to him a couple times. That is his work to me is so important, really, at the, what's going on there. But I don't know. I just don't. I can't understand why they're not being upfront with people, knowing that at some point, I mean, there's more and more stories coming out. There's more and more encounters. There's so much about them coming out now. And I can't imagine that they would continue to keep this, under wraps. I mean, what do you foresee happening in the future with that?
It will eventually reach a point where they can't ignore it anymore. They can't continue to say it doesn't exist, much like they did with UFOs. They started more recently declassifying and admitting to UFO sightings. I think the same thing has already started happening with the cryptid community. What I would like to refer to as soft disclosures. We've started seeing states, multiple states have passed protection laws of forbidding you to hunt. In 2019, the federal government tried to rewrite federal hunting regulations to include what the terminology said, near human chimeras. I don't know what else that could be talking about. There are no other near human chimeras out there. But the federal legislation failed. Don't know why. I don't even know why it was brought before federal legislation in the first place. But for them to actually discuss near human chimeras on the congressional floor is kind of telling. But then you've got states like Oklahoma who have gone completely the other direction. Oklahoma's got like a $3 million bounty out on one brought in alive, which I would be kind of interested to see if anybody could pull that off. But I do not want to be that guy. As much as I talk about wanting to find information and go out and film, I have zero intention of harming one of these things. The only way I will shoot one is in self-defense or in defense of somebody I'm with. I don't go out looking to hunt one. I don't advocate bringing one down. I think we've got enough evidence with DNA and eyewitness testimony. I mean, we've sent p people to prison for life on eyewitness testimony, but we've got enough, track evidence and DNA and hair and scat and eyewitness testimony from credible sources that there should be legitimate, scientific exploration, but the government continues to ignore it. So I think we can prove this species without killing one. The days of us having to do that are as far, hopefully, behind us.
Why do you think they're really, I mean, why are they protecting them to such a degree?
I think part of it is that the government is always looking for things they can exploit. Much like you hear tales of people, hear some of the stories that people say they saw dog man. A group of dogmen working with soldiers. Our government may not have invented or created dogmen in a lab. I think they've been around for a very long time, but that does not mean that they won't find a way to weaponize it. In World War II, they used dolphins and killer whales to plant mines. I mean, if there's an animal out there, I mean, look at military service dogs or dogs that law enforcement use. If there's a way to train an animal to do a job and save a human life, they're going to do it. But the same way they can weaponize something, you can bet your butt they're going to do it. I mean, look at World War II. At the end of World War II, Joseph Stalin tried to create a super soldier by hybridizing humans with chimpanzees. It didn't work, but he was trying to build an army of basically controllable brute soldiers that were massively strong and unstoppable.
Well, you've got some interesting theories on this. I kind of like the way, your thought process is with this. It's interesting. Now, what do you think about Melba Ketchum's study where the DNA they found was a human mother, basically a human, I think it was a Native American mother, and then the father was of unknown origin?
I don't know Melba personally, but I have read a good big chunk of her research, and I find it very interesting, but not altogether surprising. I mean, if there are Bigfoot type creatures out there and their population's dwindling, and we know from DNA tests across the globe with modern humans that there are still traces of Neanderthal DNA in our own ancestry, that these things can likely crossbreed with humans. So if their population's dwindling and they're needing mates, I could see, how, an abducted person could become, an unwilling partner. So, if they are genetically compatible, it's completely understandable, how that could happen. But does that mean eventually that they're gonna breed true and be gone? I don't know. Maybe. Or, you know, is there a stable enough population of them where they're really not going to disappear? We've got no way to know for sure what kind of numbers they exist in.
Do you think there's any kind of connection between the Sasquatch and, say, like the biblical, relation, like people talking about, the Watchers potentially creating
Nephilim.
them? Yeah. Not even Nephilim. I'm not, to me, when people say, do you believe they're Nephilim? I'm like, I don't know about that because, according to the, biblical scriptures, that the Nephilim looked more like a man and they were a lot larger, but you never know. I mean, it could be a branch of them. I mean, we don't know,
Right.
but I mean, what do you feel about that? Like any kind of connection there?
I think that we can find enough real world connection without blending anything biblical or religion into it, because religion is like a big game of what's that game we played as kids, where somebody told somebody something, and by the time it made around the circle, it was all
Oh, yeah.
baloney. Religion's like that. It changes over time. And biblical texts have a way of being either ignored or reworded, especially if you look at like the Council of Mycenae, where they decided which books of the Bible were allowed to be shown to the public. So you know what some of the older texts may have said, or even what the modern ones are supposed to say.
I know.
We
I
only
know.
know what they're willing to tell us, and I don't think that we necessarily have to bring religion in to discover the origin of Bigfoot or Dogman. I think they
Well,
existed
yeah.
before and they will exist without us.
There's a lot of people that have talked about the connection between a UFO sighting and the Sasquatch too, or the Dogman, where they'll see a UFO, and then all of a sudden they'll see Sasquatch in the area, or they've even seen them supposedly on a UFO manning the ship, which is, I mean, it sounds crazy, but I've got a very, I mean, at this point, not to have an open mind would be like, well, I don't know. I mean, I can't say either way, but I mean, some of it sounds a little crazy, but you never know. So, yeah, I didn't know if you've ever encountered anything like that or any people that have talked to you about something like that.
And it's outside my personal experience, but I have talked to people that have had experiences along those lines. But I think if an alien species is capable of traveling vast interstellar distances to come to observe us, that they would also observe any other humanoid type creature on the planet. So if they've spotted a UFO in the vicinity where they had a Bigfoot sighting, it's entirely possible that the aliens were just watching them too.
That's true. Yeah.
So I
Yeah.
don't know if there's really a connection between extraterrestrials and Bigfoot or Dogman. I don't really have enough physical evidence to say one way or the other. I wouldn't rule it out, but I think since we've been having Bigfoot sightings since before our modern history, essentially, if you look back at some of the sightings that date back to antiquities. I think we've got a pretty good idea. They've been here a long time, so I think
Yeah.
ascribing them to being brought here by aliens is a little naive and maybe a little dismissive of the evidence. It shows how far they go back.
Yeah. You don't feel that there is a connection to the Nephilim, or do you? I mean, what you didn't really, I didn't really ask you, I guess, that, point blank as far as.
I personally don't. But I would not just dismiss it outright. My time as a cop has led me to be very oriented toward physical evidence. And if it's something I can identify, something I can look at, something I can, make castings of, take pictures of, to me that's evidence. If it's any of the other stuff where, and I don't want to offend anybody, but anybody that says that they've experienced mind speak or anything like that, I don't want to say that that didn't happen because that was their connection. But it's entirely possible that that's entirely just a construct of their mind, that they had no contact with anything like that. There's no other animal in the animal kingdom that does that. We don't mind speak with wolves. We don't mind speak with other gorillas. We don't, we, you know, it just doesn't happen with any other animal. So I'm very hesitant to believe it when it comes to Bigfoot. Again, not saying it doesn't happen, not saying it can't happen, but the physical evidence doesn't really point toward it. And I'm not saying that, you know, that there's anything wrong with somebody's had that type of experience, but I had something happen to me as a cop one time that kind of makes me feel this may be the same case. I rolled up to a building, got a disturbance call, went to check a building and found it unsecured. The door was open. It was a public building that was not supposed to be open. So I got out, grabbed my flashlight and started to head into the door because I had to clear the building before I could secure it. But something told me, just like a voice in the back of my head, that said, if you go in there, you're not coming back out. And it was my own voice. It was, well, I don't think it was like a guardian angel. It was just that gut feeling saying something bad's going to happen if you go in there. So I called for an additional officer and I waited. And sure enough, when we went in, we found a subject inside the building with a weapon. So, you know, had I gone in there, I probably would have walked into an ambush. But since there were two of us, we were able to flush the person out. So I don't know if I can say for certain that that is the same thing that other people are experiencing. But if, you know, cases where people say Bigfoot mind spoke with me and told me if I take this picture, it's going to kill me. It may just be your own fear saying if I snap this picture, it may to perceive this as a threat and that's going to tear my head off. So I don't know for sure, but I think that the more fantastical the claims, the far more likely it's just something that we're attributing to the animal. I mean, you know, 150 years ago, nobody believed mountain gorillas existed. You know, they were like the British Museum guys. I always make fun of them on my show. I'm like, the British Museums of Antiquity were like, that couldn't possibly exist. And then a hunter drags one in and drops it on their desk. And they're like, oh, yes, we knew it was there all along. I get to name it.
That's hilarious. DA, you still there?
Yes, yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, sorry, I cut out for a minute. No, I love that. That's hysterical. Well, I've had some mind speak, not mind speak stuff, but I've had things tell me things that have actually come true. So I've actually experienced it, you know, with the supernatural stuff.
Right.
So
Well, you know,
I understand.
there is such a thing as clairvoyance. There truly is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll never deny that that can't happen. But I think when we're talking about Bigfoot and Dogman, I think it's far more likely it's our own fear taking on a tone. When you're dealing with something supernatural, you know, that everything comes off the table. But I think there's plenty of enough evidence to suggest that both Bigfoot and Dogman are physical, actual creatures, you know, rooted in the physical world. That ascribing, you know, supernatural abilities to them is not only a bit premature, but well, more wishful thinking than anything else.
Well, now, what would you feel? Where would your mind go if you found out, like, say you experienced it yourself, or you were like in the middle of a forest or something, and it was walking and it just disappeared in front of your eyes, or if you heard something clearly talking to you or something, I don't know, whatever claims they have for them, like, how would you, where would you, do you, have you ever thought about that? Like, what would you feel that they were at that point if you found that they did have supernatural abilities?
You know, at that point, then I have experienced it personally. But I can tell you, being a Missouri hillbilly, I have spent more time in the woods than most people you know. I have spent a great deal of time in the woods. And if something like that was going to happen, and I've had like very close encounters with things, you know, coming right up to our camp, that kind of thing. If they were going to mind speak, I think it would have happened already. I've been in some pretty hairy situations, and I've been out in areas of the woods where it just went dead quiet, and I suddenly had the feeling like this is probably a good time to go. But it wasn't something in my head saying you need to leave or I will kill you. It was, you know, it was like, oh crap, something bad's about to happen. We better start backing out of here. And
Do
it's
you
more,
hunt? Have
to me, it's more instinct than anything else.
Yeah, I do. I do. I've definitely am a firm believer in instinct too. That's kind of like, I mean, that in a, I guess you call it instinct, but it is kind of a form of clairvoyancy in a way, where you feel things and sense things and stuff, maybe something is telling you, maybe it's like a guardian angel or something. I mean, I just had something happen today that was just blew my mind. But so now, have you seen any, or have had any encounters with like dog men or little people or the rake or walkers, anything like that at all?
I actually saw a dog man in LBL. Nick Valente and I saw it 2 years ago.
Did you?
Yeah, we saw it actually just outside Demumbers Bay. Got a good look at it. It was about 30 yards away, and once it realized we saw it, it took off. But it was right off the road, just outside of Demumbers Bay. And if I hadn't been looking at it, I never would have seen it because it stood completely still. It was probably between 6.5 and 7 feet tall, completely black. And the only reason I spotted it is because we were driving down the road looking for primitive campsites. We were doing 4 or 5 miles an hour. We were just creeping down this narrow road. And I looked and I knew I saw it, but it didn't register what I was looking at. And as I started to turn my head, it turned its head to follow the movement of the vehicle, and that movement gave it away. It was like deer hunting. Every deer I've ever shot in my lifetime, the only reason I saw it is because it moved. Deer standing stock still are very hard to see. Unless they're out in the open and in a contrasting background, they're not easy to see. When you're hunting a deer and it's in the woods, unless it's moving, you're probably not going to see it. That's pretty much how my eyes were trained. I mean, I was looking for something moving, and since it wasn't moving, I just kind of looked over it. But when it moved, I saw it. And of course, at that point, I'm yelling at Nick and pointing. And I'm looking right at this thing, and Nick slammed on the brakes and turned and looked at it. And I got a 15 to 20 second look. I mean, I got a good long look at it. Nick saw it for about 10 seconds after he got the vehicle stopped, and it kind of looked at us and turned and took off. And it did this weird bounding run. It didn't run in a straight line. It kind of bounded off to its right, off to its left, off to its right again, and then shot down a ravine. And of course, we dove out of the vehicle and went after it like idiots. But we got over to that spot, and we could hear it crashing through the trees. And I looked at him like, "We're never catching that." I mean, to go down the ravine, it just went down. We would have needed ropes anyway, but I'm like, we're never going to catch that. So
Oh
we went back over to the tree where it was standing, and I was and it was standing next to this tree with its right hand on the tree, just like you would if you were leaning against a tree. And I went over and I put my hand about where I thought its hand was, and I had to raise my hand above my head to touch that same spot, but not much, not like uncomfortably so, just higher than I would put my hand against the tree to lean on it. So I asked,
right.
and I'm 5'10", so that's where I got the estimate of being between 6.5 and 7 feet tall, because it just had its hand like right out even with its head leaning against the tree. The details I can tell you about that thing is it didn't look like an upright person. It looked more like an upright canine. It had the narrower chest, but the snout was not wolf-like. It had a head shaped like a wolf with the wolf-like ears, but the snout was shorter, more blunt, kind of like a mastiff or a Rottweiler.
Right.
And I couldn't really give you a good description of the features of the face, because like I said, it was standing in the shadows and it was completely black. But I could tell you the shape of it and the way the snout looked when it turned and took off, and it was incredibly fast.
God, I can't even imagine. What was it like? I mean, what did you feel when you saw it? Was it
But
fear
first,
or?
I was just absolutely taken aback. Like, what am I looking at? And the funny thing is I had my phone in my hand with the camera app up. My intention was to film if I saw something, but it was long gone before I even thought of the camera app. I mean, in that moment when you see it, you're like, "Oh my God!" The camera was completely forgotten. My whole concentration was on getting Nick to stop and pointing it out,
Yeah.
and I didn't take my eyes off of it until it was gone. But once it started moving, like I said, it was incredibly quick.
I know I've heard, I mean, the speed, you see things on TV, like people will do, reenactments of it, and it's like, oh my dear God. I mean, can you just imagine? I mean, it's just nuts. You wouldn't stand the chance. You don't think it was with a pack or anything, or
If
you
it
didn't
was,
just,
I didn't see any others.
okay.
That doesn't mean
Okay.
they weren't there, and
Right.
probably, not a testament to Nick and I's sanity that we jumped out and ran after it. But
Oh, you guys are absolutely
I told my
And I
wife, and
suppose,
she, I
let
told
me
my
ask
wife, and she
this,
goes, "You're an idiot."
were you carrying any kind of weapon at all whatsoever?
At that moment, we weren't. We were just, driving those back roads slow, and neither of us was armed. I think I had a pocket knife on me, and Nick might have had some bear spray, but neither
Good.
of us were prepared for anything that was going to put up a fight. And
Could
it
you
was just one of
imagine?
those, I've got to get closer. When I wanted to be able to like cast tracks when I saw it, but the leaf litter on the ground was so thick, all we could see was impressions of where it had been. You could see where it stepped, but once it got through the leaf litter, there were no impressions on the ground that were castable.
That's great. Now, was it around water too? I've heard
yeah,
they run along.
We were maybe 50 yards from the lake.
Okay. Okay. Is it a lake or is it a river? Is
originally that area was known as the land between the rivers. And that was a peninsula of land between those two rivers. But in 1963, President Kennedy authorized the Tennessee River Valley Authority to build two hydroelectric dams on those rivers. And they flooded that area, making those two lakes. And now it's known as the land between the lakes. So it was originally just two rivers in the area. But, those are still massive lakes, two very large man-made lakes.
So they are lakes. I thought, when I was looking at them, they look so much like rivers. And I was like, how are they called the land between the lakes? It looks like two. And then I noticed that the name, the one was like, was it Kennedy River or what
Kentucky,
was it called?
Kentucky Lake. And I can't for the life of me think of the name of the other one.
I can't remember either.
One's Kentucky Lake and the other one's Lake Barkley, but I can't remember the name of the two rivers.
Okay, I see. So, and then you said he flooded. You said something about the one interview I was watching with you. You said that they had there was like cemeteries and stuff that were underwater and everything too.
Yeah, old homesteads. Wow. Small settlements completely under that lake. That's the same thing that's happened in a lot of places. I mean, it's one thing I'm noticing with research here in Missouri is there's quite a few man-made lakes here in Missouri, and there are entire towns beneath Lake of the Ozarks.
And then they brought large game in, right? Is that where they brought the large game in?
Yeah, in LBL they released wood, bison, and elk.
You're
not allowed to hunt them.
What in the world? How are they doing this stuff? And how do they don't even care if they justify it. They just do whatever they want to.
Notice. Most people don't even notice when the government releases some animal into the environment. I mean, here in Missouri, up until 1995, thereabouts, we probably hadn't seen a black bear in Missouri in 100 years. And then they reintroduced black bears in northern Arkansas in the mid-90s. And the population exploded because they don't have many natural predators. And now, here in southwest Missouri, they're all over the place. People are catching them on Ring doorbell cameras here in town. It's not an uncommon sight.
Oh, boy. That's really crazy. Yeah, I live in an area. I live in Pennsylvania. So, up here, and it's so funny because there's caves across the road. There's a river source. There's a cemetery. We have everything up here. It's, and, Pennsylvania is kind of littered with a lot of, different encounter stories. So we have a lot of weird stuff here. In fact, my husband saw he's pretty sure he saw a dog man in the park that's right down the road from me.
Pennsylvania's got a rich history of both cryptid and paranormal stuff. So that's
when I saw that crawler. I mean, honestly, God, DA, if you would have seen this, it was just, you wouldn't believe it till you saw it. It's like, and then you tell people and they're like, oh yeah, it's just another story. And it's like, no, I really, this is real. Like this is, the shock that goes through you when you see it and just the absolute awe that you're left with. I mean, just like when you saw that dog man, how long did that take you to even just process something like that?
My brain just went into mush mode. It was just like, when I liken it to like winning the lottery, if you're watching TV and you're looking at those last numbers drop. And when that last number drops and you realize you've just won big, you suddenly you can't process anything. You're like, bah, 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 bah. Which way did he go, George? You can't even articulate what you're watching. And it took me a better part of a minute before I was even able to really speak clearly. I mean, I was just so freaked out by what I'd seen, but I didn't really feel threatened at the same time. There were times in DeMumbers Bay and for other places in LBL that I did feel threatened, but that was when I was alone. When I was with Nick, I really, really didn't feel like I was being threatened. But then again, we didn't get too far off the beaten path. We only had like 5 days in the park, so we didn't get to explore it nearly as much as we did, but we did explore a lot of it.
How did Nick feel after he had seen,
he was as surprised as I was. We were, Hey, we, you know, Nick doesn't curse. So, you know, Nick's he's a very eloquent guy. He's from New Jersey. He's got that New Jersey accent. Very, very calm. You know, Nick's a very professional dude. And, when it was all over and we were like catching our breath, he looked at me and he grabbed me by the shirt and he goes, "Please tell me you saw what I saw." And that's when we started comparing notes. And we had the exact same description. He's like, "I can't believe we just saw that." I'm like, "I was not expecting to see anything." I mean, I knew the stories of LBL and I knew that there were dangerous things in LBL, but I didn't go there expecting a sighting. I went there just to physically experience the places that these stories had happened, to talk to people, to look for evidence, look for tracks or anything like that. I did not expect to actually physically see a creature. And when I did, it was game changing.
Wow. So you were in an area in LBL that, were you in the area that some of the people were supposedly killed in?
Now, that road that leads down to Demumbers Bay is allegedly the same road that campground used to be on where that family of four was killed in 82. Yeah. They've bulldozed that off. It's hard to find. It's not on the old, it's not on the maps anymore. And I'm supposed to get in touch with a couple people that live there locally that are going to take me to the actual campsite. But we couldn't find it when Nick and I were there because, you know, we had no idea where it was. We just knew it was somewhere close to where we were at. And that's really kind of what we were looking for. We were driving those narrow roads. We were driving real slow, looking back to look for like old campsites and things like that. See if we could, you know, because we spotted one, we were just going to get out and head straight through the woods to it. But supposedly they've bulldozed that off and you can't even find it from the road now.
Well, I mean, even if you were still in the same area, you're still basically there. I mean, if, you know, these cryptids are so, I mean, they're all over the place, you know, as far as speed and the distance that they cover. So, you know, if you're close to it, then it's enough. I mean, really, my God.
We may not have made it to the actual campsite, but I guarantee we were within 100 yards of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same thing, basically. It makes you wonder how long these creatures live, too. You know, do you have any concept of that at all? Or have you heard any studies or anything, any info on that?
Anything I would say on their age would probably be just speculation. I mean, you know, we know canines don't live as long as humans, but do they take more after the canine side? Do they take more after the humanoid side? So we don't know how long a dog man can live. And just, you know, anything with a guess is probably just, probably speculation, but I would guess a lifetime for a dog man, if I had to guess, is probably 20 years or less. I'm gonna think that they're more canine than they are human. Bigfoot, it's anybody's guess. They could have human lifespans. They could have longer. They could have shorter. I'm sure they don't have to deal with a lot of things like we do. But if they're that close to us as a species, then I'm sure certain diseases that we get can affect them as well. Much the way, you know, when Europeans first came to this continent, they brought a lot of European diseases that decimated the Native American population. I would say probably things like COVID or, you know, any other really nasty disease that we've picked up recently could probably jump species over to them.
Boy, that's crazy. It's funny. I have a dog dander allergy. I always think about imagining, I wasn't always allergic. It just happened a few years ago out of the blue. And I became severely allergic to dogs. And I always think, imagine me being out in the woods trying to find a dog, man. I mean, these things are massive. I mean, oh my God.
What we do is we take you out in the woods and I'll put my hands on your shoulders and point you in a direction. And then I'll just slowly turn you. And when you sneeze, we'll go that direction.
Oh my God. My reactions to it are so bad. I am literally a human detector on dog dander. So I would be great for that stuff. I'd just be an absolute mess. It would be awful, but it's just crazy. It's just crazy stuff. I can't believe Nick saw a dogman. That's so funny. Now, how long ago was this?
That was in July of 22.
So okay. I'm trying to think of when I interviewed him. It was a little ways. It was a little while ago. I wondered if I interviewed him then. I think it might've been before that, cause I don't remember him telling me that story, but I wanted to see if he had any, does he have any new encounters that he's been, cause he was telling me that there were people in the Poconos that had reported a dog. They were seeing a dog man running around their property. They lived up back in like a cul-de-sac and they had like a garage. like a business, like a part of their house, and it was their business, and they had been reporting some dogman sightings up in the Poconos. Do you know anything about that?
I just what I heard from Nick, there's a couple of ones that he went to that people were reporting as dogman that turned out to be Bigfoot. And there was another one that he went to in New Jersey that people were saying there's a giant dogman in this area that turned out to be a really big black bear. They saw it. But Nick's got some great stories, and he that visual that him and I had is not his only visual. You need to get him to tell you his first encounter with a dogman because it's pretty creepy.
Like I said, I'll have to listen to the encounter. It's been quite a while, but I don't remember where. But I told him I would get a hold of him again because obviously things continue. When you do an interview with somebody and then you haven't talked to them for a couple years, there can be a lot that happens in between that time. So it's always nice to have people to, come back on and tell of anything that's current. But
Exactly.
so and
Nick's
then
one of
you
those
mentioned.
guys I wouldn't hesitate to go out in the middle of the woods with. I've gone out with people that I deer hunted with. I've gone out to some pretty rugged places, and when things got nasty, I would look up and they would be on the halfway back to the truck. Nick's one of those guys, he'd be like, "Hey, try and keep up with me. We're going to chase this thing down." So yeah, Nick's one of those I wouldn't hesitate to go out in the middle of nowhere with.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, he's such a nice guy. I really enjoyed talking to him. He was great. Tell me about the Moss Mountain Massacre or incident with Thomas. Was it Thomas Nuttall or
Yes,
Nuttall? Okay.
he was a naturalist. This was, I believe, it was in the 1820s or 30s. They were first documenting species of what's that?
I'm sorry, you just cut out for a minute. Go ahead. Go ahead.
He was a naturalist, and they were documenting species, specifically species of birds and small animals, throughout Arkansas. They were taking an entire expedition. That was not just one or two people. There was 15, 20 people in this group. And when they got to Moss Mountain, most of them had gotten sick. I think it was something akin to malaria, maybe something along those lines. But they, most of the party had gotten sick. So they camped out on Moss Mountain to give everybody a chance to recuperate. Well, during the night, Nuttall woke up. And he described large, hairy, human-like creatures entering the camp and killing about half the party. He managed to hide and got away, but a good chunk of that expedition was wiped out by what he described as Bigfoot. But he didn't know what they were. He didn't call them by that name. He just said wild, hairy men. And when he gave his description to the scientific community, of course, they pretty much ostracized him and said he was crazy, but they couldn't deny the fact that half his party was killed.
Oh my
So I think there's a lot to this story that we'll never really know, because I think most of his notes are gone because they thought he was crazy. They didn't preserve his notes, but all of the other journal entries he took of known animals were spot on. So why is it this one incident at Moss Mountain is so hard for them to believe? Especially when you couple that with the fact of how many of his party got killed.
Right. Oh my God. Did they say how they were killed? I mean, did they say were they weapons, or did they just come in and like break necks, or I mean, what
They
was,
were dis had a had a limbs torn off and were smashed against trees.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it sounds like territorial stuff going on, you know?
Probably was. They probably
Yeah.
were in something's hunting domain, and they weren't supposed to be there. And of course, they
Oh.
had no way of knowing that.
I wonder how many exist. I wonder how many, like, the Bigfoot exists, how many of the dogmen exist, like that type of stuff.
I think it's
You
very
know.
hard to say
Yeah.
with any real conviction on exact numbers, because it's only a guess when we say how many black bears we have in the US, and that's an animal species we all agree on that actually does exist. But I
Right.
think if you look at the missing 411, if you take the missing 411 superclusters and clusters, and you align that map with the map of known cave systems, it overlaps almost perfectly.
Does it
So
really?
I think these things are using cave systems not only as a highway, but as a place to hide from us.
Right.
I think they've been using caves for a long time, and Missouri's riddled with caves, and you know we've got plenty of water and plenty of forest, so I think it's a perfect habitat for them, which I think is why we've got got as many sightings as we do. I mean, the Mark Twain National Forest alone is 2.5 or no 3.5 million acres of untouched forest land, with tons of rivers and lakes and plenty of
Wow.
habitat and caves, plenty of places where these things could get completely lost. And that's just one of the national parks, the national forests. When Teddy Roosevelt set aside the National Park Service, he set aside 88 million acres of forest land, heavily forested land, much of it we still don't have full access to today.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I know you believed he was the actual author of that book that he wrote, or that the book that was written, don't
Well, he
you?
did write the book. We know that for a fact. He wrote The Wilderness Hunter, but the Bauman incident, I truly believe Bauman was Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That could very well be. That's, but I
To
mean,
me, it
it
makes
just,
perfect sense.
it does. It does. I just wonder how much of it, like when you think about the numbers that there are of these creatures, like how we know what kind of a threat they are, because if there's, you don't know how great the numbers are and if they're actually increasing or are they decreasing, what's going on, of course, the government. Do you think the government hunts them?
I think the government has military teams that hunt these things. When they get out
Okay.
of hand or when too many people disappear in an area, they'll send people in to pacify it. There's too many stories, including the original LBL incident, where they talk about special forces units coming in.
Yeah.
Special forces units don't come in to help with missing persons. Just
No.
doesn't happen. They bring in a special forces team with helicopters, something bad's going on.
Yeah.
With the missing 411 cases, when you look at those, the sheer number of people that go missing that the National Park Service won't even really openly admit to, you got to think, a good chunk of those are being prey. They're prey being preyed upon, and I don't think there's any one clear answer of what exactly is taking everybody in the missing 411 cases, because those criteria are pretty specific. People disappear under those odd circumstances, and that's not even counting the people that have gone missing and were found, or
Yeah.
died of like natural causes, or were killed by a bear. They're not even including those.
Right.
The missing 411 cases are meeting very specific criteria. So if these things are hunting in that area, those areas, and they're using cave systems, it would be virtually impossible for us to find them. Because in order
Right.
to take an expedition deep into a cave, it's not an easy process. It is something they've got to set up a base camp and then supply it, then establish a further base camp. Because going into those caves, miles back in those caves, is not easy. But for creatures that don't need to worry about, setting up supplies, they might have supplies thrown over their shoulder, or they've already got supplies down there. These deep caves could be a highway for these things. And they've
Yeah.
recently that they believe the Mammoth Cave system extends from Maine all the way to southern New Mexico.
Good Lord. I've never heard of that before. Wow, that's
Yeah, the Mammoth Cave
crazy.
system is vast.
Oh my gosh, I'll have to check that out on the internet and see if there's, do they have pictures and, oh, I'd love to look at that. That would be
And
amazing.
there are stories from the U.S. some of the U.S. Geological Survey teams that have gone deep into the Mammoth Caves, of them and getting 2 and 3 days in and finding old backpacks and camping equipment that's busted.
I bet.
Normal people don't get that deep in a cave. So
No.
what? How are they finding this old equipment that deep in that cave?
Yeah, I know. And there's got to
Something
be just,
carried it down there.
there's got to be cryptids or whatever you want to call them that are, ones that are more or less aggressive and some that are even friendly and then ones that aren't. So that, I imagine maybe the government, when they get wind of ones that are attacking people, that's kind of the symbol or the signal to go in and get rid of those in particular in that area. I mean, you've heard of stories of people being saved by them
Right.
and such. So, you never know.
I would say their personalities run the gamut much like humans do. I
Yeah.
mean, we've got serial killers among humans. We've got people that are, well, I could tell you from my time in law enforcement, well, I've got people that are just plain evil. And I've
Yeah.
seen it. I've dealt with them. Of course, you've got your some people who are just misguided, or some people who are just thoughtless. But we do have people that are just nasty, evil human beings, and that's just the way it is. But you've also got people who are kind. You've got people that'll help you, that would give you the shirt off their back to help them. And I think it's the same with cryptids. You're going to run into some that are very, very friendly, or might even be, approachable. But then you approach the wrong one, and you're a missing 411 case.
I know. What do you think about the portal situation, where people talk about, say the people that are in line and they're, say in the middle of a field and there's nothing around and they're in line and they turn around and there's somebody missing? I mean, what's your take on something like that? Do you think there's such thing as portals?
Well, I know portals do exist, because CERN was able to open one. So I will not say portals are impossible. But again, there's no evidence of any animal in the animal kingdom using portals. Right. When you see tracks that have disappeared in the middle of a field, look to our own special forces troops. They are trained how to walk back on their own tracks to avoid being followed. It's backtracking. There are animals in the animal kingdom that do it. Bears do it. People that hunt bears that are tracking the bears will sometimes find that bear right behind them because it backtracked and waited for them to pass. There are animals that know how to backtrack on their own tracks, and it takes somebody that really knows a thing or two about tracking to be able to spot it. Someone that's just spent a little time out in the woods, or hunted a bit and knows how to follow footprints, they may miss it. But Robbie, on our show, Robbie's a trained man tracker. Robbie tracks people for his department. He's still an active cop. He's been to the classes. Whenever they've got a runner that they're searching for that goes out into the woods, because he lives in a pretty rural area, Robbie's the guy they call in to track down a missing person, or to track somebody that's a fugitive. Robbie knows a hell of a lot about tracking, and Robbie can tell you the difference between just a regular footprint and a backtracking footprint, because they have these things that are called pressure ridges. And it's when you step down, when you're walking forward, the pressure ridge starts at the heel because your heel strikes the ground first. But when you're walking backwards, that pressure ridge is going to be at the front.
Right. Oh, that's fascinating. That's really,
Robbie could lecture you for an hour on different types of tracks. And I've gone out in the woods with Robbie a number of times, and he is scary good when it comes to identifying and following tracks. Wow. I used to think I was pretty good at tracking stuff because, like I said, I've grown up in the woods and deer hunted all my life. I've got nothing on Robbie. He was just absolutely astounding.
That's amazing. Do you carry now? Like, I mean, that story that you told with the LBL and going in there without a weapon, I was like, what is he thinking? I was like, is he out of his mind?
At the time, I was under the impression that I was unable to carry a firearm in LBL. There's hunting seasons that are open in LBL, but you've got to meet certain criteria. But you are allowed to carry like a pistol for personal protection. I didn't know that at the time. But the way things are anymore, I rarely even check my own mail without a handgun on. If you see me out in public, there's a 99.99% chance I'm armed. You may not see it, but I am.
Well, what type of a weapon, like say you were going out into the wilderness and you thought for sure you were going into an area where there were Sasquatch or Dogman, what would you carry with you then if you knew that you were going to, take a chance like that?
Well, it depends on the area. Like if I go out in the Mark Twain, you can't carry long guns in the Mark Twain because it's national forest land. You can't go out there with long guns unless you're hunting and you have the licensure and the permits and everything. So I'll probably just carry a big handgun. But in some areas I have been known to throw a shotgun over my shoulder just because I wanted one. It's the old story. I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. So when we go out, it also depends on who I'm with. Usually I've got a large caliber, 1911 style handgun that I take. But if my son and some of our other guys I go with are with me, they all have 9mm. So I'll carry a 9mm so we can swap magazines because they're all Glocks. But if it's just me or somebody else, I guarantee you I've got at least 2 handguns and 4 or 5 edged weapons on me.
Are you really aware of your surroundings when you go out alone? Like, do you ever have fear when you're out there?
I'm very hyper aware of my environment when I'm around. When you go on law enforcement and you go to the academy, they really push something they refer to as situational awareness. And they tell you need to be running scenarios in your head all the time. Like if you stop for a cup of coffee and you walk into a what jokingly refer to as a stop and rob, if you walk into a convenience store, know where your exits are. Take a quick look at every face in there and look for threats. These are things that were just ingrained in my head, and I still do that. My wife, even though I'm retired now, if my wife and I go out to eat, when we go to the table, she'll go, "Where do you need to sit?" Because she knows if I can't see the exit from where I'm sitting, I will not eat. I will constantly be turning my head and looking everywhere. So she still went till still to this day, when we go to a table, she says, "Pick where you need to sit, and we'll all sit according to that." So, that situational awareness really never goes away once it's instilled in your head. And I apply a lot of what I learned as a cop to my research. The way I collect evidence, the way I study the field, the way I watch my surroundings, it's really kind of a really, I think it's the best way to approach that situation, because if you go in expecting them to be the big Harry and the Henderson's teddy bear, you might end up a missing 411. And I'm not saying that all of them are that way, but if even 10% of them are that way, you have to assume they all are. I mean, it's like a grizzly bear. You might walk up a trail, and this actually happened to me up in Rocky Mountain National. I rounded a corner and came nose to nose with a teddy bear, a grizzly bear, a teddy bear. I could have reached out and popped it. I could have reached out and popped it on the nose. I do this little game with my dog. When he walks up to me, I'll reach out and hit him on the nose and go boop. I could have done that to that bear. And it was, I mean, li literally within arm's length. And it looked at me and I looked at it, and I think we both had the same oh shit expression on our face. And it turned and went off the trail and headed down the side of the mountain, and I turned and hauled ass back the other way. But it had that been a different situation, like had it just woken up from hibernation, or if it was just getting ready to go in, or if it had had cubs with it, I would have gotten mauled to death.
Oh my
But
gosh.
people have peaceful encounters with wild animals all the time, but it doesn't mean it's always going to be peaceful, even with the same animal. You get those, people that see in Yellowstone that think they can pet the fluffy cows. Never really works out very well for them.
God. I know I was reading there's an incident where a guy, I don't know where it was, what state it was in, but he was sitting out on his picnic table by his cabin, and a black bear, it was a black bear, came in and it mauled him just from, he was just sitting at his picnic table and it
Yeah.
killed him. So
You
I
got to be
was
very
shocked
careful.
by that. Yes, it's amazing. I remember when I was a kid, we went to this club, Gray's Run. It was a hunting lodge, and we would go up there just for like vacations and stuff like that. And we were in the, my aunt and I were in the woods walking back from a trail. And I remember looking back and I saw this black bear coming up from behind us. And it was quite a ways back, but still they could, and I've seen black bear run, and let me tell you, these suckers can run. I
Yeah,
mean,
you
they can go
run
from
if it wants to.
zero. They, I've never, my grandfather used to tell me that they can run like literally look like horses running when they run. He said they run so fast. And I thought he was, just making this up. And then one day this, the mother bear was in with her cubs, and a male bear came in when they were feeding. We used to, they had feeders out at the lodge, and, the mother bear, the cubs went up the tree and she chased after this thing, and it was a dead run. It was like zero to like, I don't know how many miles an hour, but I mean, she was, it was like a streak of lightning went through that forest. It
Yeah.
was insane how fast they run. They're so capable. They can climb, they can run, they can swim. It's like the ultimate predator, really. Aside from cryptids, of course, but
Yeah.
this one was walking in back of us, and I remember I looked at my aunt and I said, "There's a back or bear in back of us." And she looked at me. She's like, "Oh yeah, sure, Trace." And we were just walking, and she turned around and she saw. She goes, "Oh my God, there really is a bear!" And we started walking really fast, but we didn't run. It was pretty cool, but it was, it turned out okay for us that day. But it's pretty scary stuff,
Yeah.
So,
Well,
but
there are videos
yeah.
that are coming out of Alaska of hunters catching video of grizzly bears chasing down and killing moose. So they're very capable of going quick over even short distances. They can
Oh,
definitely outrun a human.
can you imagine? Can you imagine if you're out in the woods somewhere, just and one just decides to turn on you, and what the heck are you gonna do? It,
Well,
I
try
don't
to
even know.
taste bad.
Yeah, I know. Well, I carry, I'm like you. I can't, I always sit with my back, face or my, I'm facing the doorways and exits and stuff like that and entrances when I go out. And I also carry bear mace a lot when I, even when I go places, if I'm going for like a walk or something, I'll carry like, pepper spray with me. And, I always carry like stuff on me just in case I run into a dog or something that, could attack me and stuff like that. So, but I can't even imagine running into a grizzly bear or, I mean, just, I mean, I mean, I don't know how people survive it. I really don't. I don't have any idea how they survive it,
A
but
lot of
it's,
them don't.
I know you were talking about, another thing I wanted to bring up was you were talking about Alaska and the UFOs. I don't know if it was the UFOs, but you were talking about the 60, what was 65,000 people disappear. Is it a year or has
There's
it,
an And the area is called the Alaskan Triangle, and roughly
right.
66,000 people have gone missing over the last 30 years. It's one of the greatest concentrations of people going missing in a single area in the world.
And they don't, they're not attributing that to bear attacks or that's just, is that something they think it's, I mean, what are they saying that
Well,
is, or aren't
if
they
you
saying?
talk to the Department of Natural Resources or the Fish and Wildlife, they'll say, probably most of it's bear attacks and that kind of thing. But Fred Roll, who has the channel, the Subarctic Sasquatch, he lives up there. He's a native Alaskan. And him and I have talked about this at length. And he's like, no, a good chunk of those are not bears because bears are lazy. If bear kills something, they'll probably drag it a little ways, but then they'll bury it in leaves, and then they'll defecate on it to keep other animals away from it so they can come back and feed on it. A lot of these that are going missing in the area that they refer to as the Alaskan Triangle are just gone, never found again. No
That
trace.
is crazy. Now there again, there's that portal question. What about just people falling into portals or walking through them? Do you think that might be part of the problem that's going on as well?
I don't
Or
really think that's the case personally. And again, I could be wrong. I think that that area is just so vast, and the wilderness is so thick that even aircraft have gone missing and never, no trace has ever been found. In the Pacific Northwest alone, I think there's something along the lines of 53 aircraft or 55 aircraft that have gone down in Washington and Oregon and never a trace has been found because those woods are just incredibly dense. And a lot of people who spend most of their time in cities, or they're the closest they get to an actual national forest is what they see online, don't realize how thick those woods can get and how quickly you can become disoriented and lost in them. But I think a lot of those, they're just so far off the beaten path, it's impossible to find them. But I don't necessarily think portals even have to come into play with it. And again, I'm not saying it's impossible. But if these things were able to travel through portals and disappear at, and reappear wherever they felt like, if that was truly true, and some of them, as we've already established, do eat humans, then there would be absolutely nothing we could do to stop them. They would appear in your living room, kill your whole family, and disappear again, and no one would ever be able to stop them.
Well, they think that's where the whole line with like they believe from what I've the theories I've heard was that they believe that there's a line that they're like there's a spiritual law in place that doesn't allow them to just hunt, whatever they want or whenever they want. There's like some, things they can't cross.
I
So,
think that I think that's just wild speculation. I don't think
yeah.
there's any proof for that whatsoever. I mean, if a grizzly bear wants in your house, it's coming in.
The theories are
There's
fun
no
though.
magical boundary at the edge of your house that makes a grizzly bear go, nope, they're inside. I can't go in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I guess that would be, it would only apply if it was something that was like of, the satanic realm or the
Right.
dark side. They would have to be of that side really for that really to apply, which is possible. I'm kind of like you where I, I've got all kinds of, I just, I mean, you just, you feel like you would sound absolutely foolish to say, what it is or what's going
Right.
on. So you say what you feel it could be, like what your mind or your spirit kind of leans towards, but you still, you're like, you just, I mean, we don't know. So it's just, to me, it's ludicrous when people are like, oh, I know exactly what they are. Like, no, you don't. Nobody
Right.
knows what they are. Nobody really knows
Yeah,
what's going on with it.
whenever I make a video or we do a show, about, you know, dangerous cryptids. I always get one or two like, oh, I've been in, you know, in telepathic combination contact with two tribes of Bigfoot for the last 35 years, and they, you know, blah blah blah. And you always get those. And those are the people that were probably banned from calling the UFO hotline too many times in a week.
It makes you wonder, though, like, I mean, what if they really are in contact with them, but then there's a society that's like, yeah, but it just kind of, I don't know, you know, you just can't really.
Again, I want to. I tend to fall on what the most logical explanation is. Occam's
Yeah,
razor is generally the truth. And in situations like that, the most likely explanation is somebody is off their meds.
some of it just gets to be, you know, I mean, there's even like people I'm, you know, I'm kind of close to, and they, you know, they make claims to being close to this and close to that. And but there's part of it I'm just like, I just don't know. It sounds to me like it's either like not even a delusion, but just something they kind of, you know, dream up that they want it to be that way or so. I don't know. You
Yeah,
just after a
I've
while,
seen
you
a
get
lot of
the
these people
feeling.
talking at Bigfoot conventions and stuff like that, and I generally get what I refer to as the full body eye roll. As soon as they start talking, you're like, oh, great.
I know. So
And
I've gotten kind of like a little, I used to be more open about it. Now I'm kind of getting like, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true. You know, I'm not going to sit there and say
right.
they're a liar because it very well could be true. It's just, it's one of those things that you really have to, you really would almost need to, you know, validate or have more of, you know, something more to really, you know, believe it all. But,
The
you
thing
know,
is if you've had contact with these and you're a member of three tribes and you speak their language, how come you've got zero evidence of any of that? At some point, you hair, you would have gotten a picture. I know if I was a member of a Bigfoot tribe, I'd be like, hey, you know, big hairy dude, how about you let me take a selfie with you? You know, like, or you know, I'd be like posing in the picture and smiling. I'll be teaching them
I don't know.
campfire songs and crap like that, but you know, the more fantastical the
Some of it,
claims, the more
yeah.
they expect you to just accept it for, you know, for what they say it is. And you know, I've heard
Yeah.
people that talk about how Bigfoot's come in their house and thrown parties, and
Yeah.
every time I hear that, I'm just like, oh, great, it's another one of them.
Yeah, and like I
But
said,
I don't.
it can be possible. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I don't believe it. I kind of am more feeling like I'm just kind of like getting, you kind of get tired of, I
Right.
think, hearing it so much because, like, you know, there's so little, like you said, like they're, like if they're that close, I mean, wouldn't they have something? You know, wouldn't there be
Right.
more of something? And you would think so, but then they do claim that they don't like, you know, having their pictures taken. And I get that, but I am kind of like, you know, there's just times when you just kind of get like, okay, I just don't know, you know,
Yeah.
like I
And
just don't know.
there's always an excuse for why they have zero evidence to back it up. You know, I know guys that have never seen one that have more print and hair, more in print and hair evidence than any of these wild speculation claims. And I'm not saying that the woo doesn't exist. I'm not saying that people aren't experiencing this sort of thing. What I am saying is, if you're looking for that kind of stuff, my channel's not for you.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, like I said, I try to keep an open mind about it. Like you kind of like you do. You know, I just, you know, I kind of, you know, you get your feelings, and sometimes when people are talking, you kind of get the feeling that maybe they're not, this isn't quite exactly how it is. You know, this is just like maybe
Right.
something they're dreaming up, or they just want attention, or, you know, and I'm not saying that's like that for everybody. I'm sure that there's all kinds of different encounters and stories, and maybe people get too afraid, you know, and they don't think about taking a picture, and there's all kinds of reasons, you know, maybe. But I mean, I just, you know, it's just something. I think I'm at the point now where I'm like, I'd really just kind of like to see a little more evidence, you know, with some of it, you
Exactly.
know, than just
And
talking about stories, you know.
again,
So,
my time in law enforcement has made me a very physical evidence-oriented person. If I can't identify the evidence, then I have trouble just accepting it, you know, on based on somebody's word alone,
I understand.
especially when it's completely unsubstantiated or even unsubstantiatable. But
Yeah.
I'm
There's
just.
just times when you hear a person talk enough about it that after a while you start to actually, the doubt starts to creep in. And
Right.
I can be honest about that. Like where you hear a person, like say there's this person that's claiming to have so many experiences with them. And I'm not saying they don't. Like I said, I'm not going to call them a liar because I don't know. But there's just times when after a while, you hear so much of it, and you kind of get like, okay, I like you just start to kind of feel like I'm not so sure if I believe this person all the time,
Right.
so it I know what you feel. I know
Pretty much,
the feeling.
when I was still an officer, if I went to a crime scene, if I went to, to check on a person and looked in the window and saw them dead in their chair, and you can tell by looking in the window they've been shot, but they don't have a gun anywhere near them, so you can look in there and go, this was likely a murder. And I find that the every window and door to the house is locked from the inside. Okay. We have to make entry. We have to force our way into the house, and we get in and find out, yes, this is murder. Somebody killed this guy, but the house was secured from the inside. If the first thing I go is, yep, portals, I'm going to be peeing in a cup and going out for a psych eval.
Yeah. It gets overdone is basically what I'm saying. I
Right.
think some people overdo it. I think they might have had encounters, or they might be having encounters, but I think they get into this realm of storytelling and the attention and all the stuff that it's giving them, and I think they start to embellish, and I feel like they start to go overboard with it. And it's very
Well,
attention
and
seeking in a lot of
I think
ways.
a lot of it is that along those lines, but it's also, people since the beginning of time have came up with fantastical explanations for things they couldn't explain. I mean, the Vikings used to believe that the Northern Lights were the lights reflecting off of the lights of the Rainbow Bridge reflecting off the armor of the Valkyries. And we
That's
know
crazy.
for a fact that's not what it is, but that's what they believe because they couldn't explain it. That's where I think where cloaking comes from, and I think that's where portals come from, is because these things have the ability to blend in perfectly with their surroundings. I mean, for Christ's sake, they're wearing a natural ghillie suit, and we all know that motion in the woods is what gives away a subject. If you're dead still, even if you're wearing colors that aren't necessarily camouflage, if you're dead still, people will walk right by you. I've had it done. I've had that
Wow, that's
happen to me.
amazing. That's amazing.
The thing is, when we can't explain something, they want to try to explain it, so they jump to portals, they jump to cloaking. And when we try to offer them a more grounded, more evidence-based explanation, like the clear hair shafts, the adaptive camouflage, the walking back on their tracks, they immediately go, no, that couldn't possibly be it. I would know.
That's the part where I'm like, okay, but we don't know, and we're all throwing theories out here. We're trying to put our feelers out to see, if we can figure this out together. And it's, everybody's got to kind of like, keep an open mind, but stop, BSing. I mean, don't, tell the truth, and don't, make up stories for attention or act like you have so many encounters with these things that you don't, and it, it's kind of like, I don't know, there's just a lot of stuff going on right now, and it or
Well,
there has
if we want mainstream science to take cryptozoology seriously, we want scientists like, Dr. Ketchum or Dr. Jeff Meldrum. We want scientists to actually look at this objectively and start paying true scientific attention to this phenomenon. If we want that to happen, we've got to present them with physical evidence. Fanciful stories and wishful thinking will only make them roll their eyes and think we're all crazy.
You get a lot of the pareidolia stuff too. I see it online all the time where, even some of my friend, like people I've gotten close to through all this, I love them dearly, but everything they see in the woods, they turn it into a Sasquatch face, or
Yeah.
they'll put these pictures up, and you're like, dude, this doesn't, you're starting to look
You're really
crazy,
grasping at straws here. Pareidolia is a real thing, and so many people send me red circle photos, or we'll post them on Facebook and say, there's seven Bigfoot inside this circle, and you look at it and like, all I see is leaves. We refer to that on our channel as bullshitography.
It's crazy, DA. I see it. I mean, these are people that are really like, trying to, and I'm like, I can't believe they actually put this out there, and they're actually, putting themselves on the line by trying to convince people that this is like, really like I don't even really have the words for it. I mean, it's just insane to me. Their
Could go out
credibility
right
just
now.
goes out the window,
I could go out into my backyard right now to the fence between my house and the neighbor behind me. There's a house back there, But I have, along the fence line is a honeysuckle bush, and it's pretty thick. I could get down on one knee and take a picture of that honeysuckle bush where you couldn't see the house directly on the other side of it, post it and throw a couple red circles on it, and there'll be 25 people swear they see Bigfoot.
Right. And that's pretty much what's going on. And that's some of the stuff. That's when you start to really, you know, some of the people that you think are credible, and then you start to watch their behaviors and the things they're claiming and the pictures they're throwing up. And then that's where you start to feel like, okay, this is starting to look and sound a little bit crazy to me. You know, some of the stuff in the beginning was okay, but now it's starting to, as it's progressing, it's starting to sound really crazy, you know.
And we're also getting a whole host of people that are using Lowe's AI art programs to create images of Bigfoot and trying to pass them as real. And they're pretty easy to spot, but in, you know, 5 or 6 years, when that AI technology is improved, it's going to get very hard to tell when a fake photo is fake.
Yeah, I know. It's just, and like I said, I mean, we know they're real. It's not that we're discounting that they're real. It's just, I think people really need to get a grip on themselves with this, you know, and really, you know, be honest about it, you know. But
the hoaxers are doing their best to destroy the credibility of this field. But, you know, I think some of it's deliberate. I really do. I think that there are people that are put in place to keep making us look like a bunch of crackpots.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's no doubt. I mean, like I said, that cover up thing that's going on with all this they are intense. They've been very intensely covering this up for a very long time. And, you know, just the question is why, you know,
easy way to tell if something more is going on with a situation, especially if you see it in the news, than they're willing to admit. It's a real easy way to tell. Like in September of 2022, when the Amazon driver was attacked and mauled to death here in Missouri, they said that there were two domestic dogs that did it. However, I had the opportunity to hear directly from the sheriff and the coroner of that county that they had never in their lives seen a body torn up that bad.
Oh boy.
So domestic dogs couldn't have done what they said was done to that body. And here's how you can tell that there's more going on than they're willing to admit. Because when the state investigators took over that investigation, they shut it down. And the dogs were killed on premises, and they said the dogs killed these people, and that's the end of the story. Yet if that was the end of the story, the case would be closed. But if you tried to Freedom of Information Act that case, it's still held open because open cases are not subject to Freedom of Information Act.
Oh, okay.
A lot of agencies are getting around admitting what actually happened to somebody. If you look into cases that are still held open, even though they've said this is what happened and we know it, if the case is still open, they're lying.
Wow.
They are not telling us what really happened.
Yeah, they don't seem to want to. Have you ever talked to David Pilates at all?
I have not had the chance to. I wanted to go to a couple of shows where he was at, but just missed my opportunity. I would love to sit and chat with the guy, especially, you know, swap old stories cop to cop. But I would love to be able to sit and pick his brain, but I've never had the opportunity to.
Yeah, I've wanted to have him on the show. I just haven't done, I do episodes when I have something to say. I don't really put things out just to entertain people. I don't do it just to, you know, just to, like, I don't, it's not like a systematic, one show a week or whatever. I just do it when I have something to say. So it's kind of, you know, that's really why I started it. I didn't ever intend to get into all this, but then I started to talk about all the things that I was going through, like this, like I have a lot of psychic ability and stuff. I don't know where it comes from, but you know, I've done, like, predicted my sister dying and my uncle dying and seen another friend of mine that was going to, like, just weird. It's always death. And it's so effective that it's death. It's always like, why is it always death? You know, I feel like this weird, you know, harbinger of death news or something, but I've gotten a lot of that stuff and, you know, just seen a lot of spiritual stuff and just heard things and, you know, just been through a lot of stuff. And then, you know, had a couple cryptid sightings and, you know, just different things, but I've had a lifetime of really weird, you know, just weird. So, I started to do a channel and I just do it, you know, when I have, like I said, when I have something to say, you know, so that's what I go on. Yeah. And I heard
in this field, one thing I've noticed in this field is, like, I Well, a great example of how this works is I my after our accident 2 years ago, I bought a Nissan Rogue, a little SUV that can get into some pretty tight spaces. Before I owned one, I never noticed one on the road. Now I see them everywhere. It's not like they weren't there before. I just didn't pay any attention to them. And in this field, be it paranormal or be it cryptid, once you open that door, once you start noticing the things that are going on around you, once that door is open, it's open. You know, it's not, and that's why a lot of people like yourself are having more paranormal experiences, because once you've made that switch in your head where you've accepted it's real and you don't ignore it, you stop ignoring things that your conscious brain would normally throw out. Same thing out in the woods with your without dealing with cryptids. Things that you would normally just ignore. Like I can remember when I was younger hearing wood knocks in the woods. I didn't know what the hell they were, so I didn't pay any attention to them. I just thought somebody was out chopping wood. But now if I hear one, I'm like, that's interesting. But once you start understanding what certain things are, you're far more likely to encounter them because your brain is now hardwired to look for them.
Yeah, that must be. It's really bizarre. I always have something that talks to me in my right ear, like something will say, like you were talking about, you know, that thing that gave you a feeling about not going in that building. It's like a voice and you feel like it's your voice. You hear it as your voice, but you know it's like it didn't come from you. And so and then you start to follow it. If you start to actually, you know, give it some play and like say, you know, something tells you not to do something and you don't, and then you find out later, thank God you didn't go. And you're like, and you start to realize, wow, there's something there that, you know, I have some kind of an instinct or a, you know, whatever it is, but it is really, you know, I do believe, you know, in a higher power. So, you know,
I jokingly refer to that part of your brain as the lizard brain or the monkey
I
brain. Monkey brain has saved my ass on more than one occasion, let me tell
yeah.
you, because that's the part of your brain that can still access your primitive instincts. And not a lot of people know how to do that anymore. As a modern society, we've kind of lost that. But when you work in a profession like law enforcement, where you've got to trust those instincts, where you've got to be able to observe a situation and kind of determine which way you need to go or where the danger is at or what's a threat and what isn't. Once that part of your brain is active again, it becomes pretty powerful. I mean, threat assessment and what we were talking about before, situational awareness. Once you've actually started doing that, you don't really ever turn it off again.
I know it gets, sometimes it gets worse. You know, a lot of people that have near death encounters too, even say they come back with, you know, different abilities and stuff, like they're more open or whatever. I don't know what that is, but that's, you know, that's interesting to me because, you know, I watch some near death encounters sometimes and some of those stories are pretty interesting. You know, they're just, it's fascinating stuff. Our world is just, it's a fascinating place. It really is. It's really crazy. My
I
husband
definitely
used
agree
to
with
say that.
that.
My husband used to say that the world of magic left at some point, like it left our realm, and he felt it was coming back. And I was like, well, that's pretty, you know, you hear people seeing like, you know, little people and pixies and all this stuff going on. I'm like, my God, if like even half of this stuff is true, you know, this is gonna be a really wild ride to, you know, to deal with all this stuff and observe it. And good
I don't
Lord.
think it ever really went away. I think that we as children are told that the monster in our closet doesn't exist and those are just fairy tales. And as we get older, we accept that and our conscious brain just doesn't pay any attention to that kind of stuff anymore. We're like, oh, that's just my imagination. That's, just a shadow. That's, I'm making that up. But as more and more people become reattuned to those instincts and, having experiences and accepting them for what they are, I think that what we quote unquote call magic has been there all along. I just think that we're only recently becoming more in tune with our surroundings to observe things that we have always been there. We just didn't notice them before.
It is interesting how much it seems like so many more people are really, you know, that enlightenment is happening with people. I'm for real. Like people talk about it, but it's like it really is, something is, you know, happening here where there's, you know, eyes are being opened more and people are more aware of what's going on and they're seeing things. And even with the cryptid sightings, like you, it seems like you're hearing so many more stories. Like so, or it's either more sightings are happening or people are coming out with their encounters more. I'm not sure which one it is, if it's maybe a little bit of both.
I think people are starting to feel more comfortable coming forward.
Yeah.
You know, we've got so many shows like yours and mine and places on social media where there are groups that people talk about it. I think people are feeling more comfortable bringing the stories forward. But I still talk to a lot of people that say, I'm going to tell you what happened, but you can never give out my name because, you know, in some cases they were a judge or a doctor or
Yeah.
other cops. And they don't want to go on the record because that could be a career ender when people say, I had this
Yeah.
experience. And I've heard some pretty interesting stories from people that worked in very official capacities over the years that are terrifying stories, but they still don't want their name associated with it in any way.
But you're allowed to tell the story, correct? I
Oh yeah,
mean, you don't.
I can tell the stories,
Okay.
but I just can't ever say who told me.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I guess that's okay, though. You know, you don't always have to attach a name to it,
Right.
but the credibility thing always helps. But it, you know, I mean, still, I mean, there's enough credible witnesses anyway. So it's just, you know, it's just one of those things. But wow, it's just incredible. I can't get over all this. It's overwhelming at times, you know.
Can be.
But I think I just get a kick out of thinking about you and Nick, two law enforcement guys out running around the woods trying to find dog bed.
Well, in retrospect, probably not the smartest thing we ever did, but it was fun.
Think that's great. Now, one question though, before we get off of here, what caliber bullet do you think would actually take one of these creatures down?
You know, that's a question we've pondered a lot. And I don't necessarily think it comes down to caliber. We are talking about an animal with a great deal of muscle mass and thick bone. You wouldn't use a 22 to try to stop a moose, obviously.
Right.
But I think when we start dealing with creatures like this, it's more about where you shoot it instead of how what you shoot it with. I would still definitely recommend whatever the biggest caliber you got. But if all you got's a 9 millimeter,
Yeah.
and that's what you got to defend yourself, that's what you got to defend yourself with. And in
Yeah.
that case, aim for large arterial clusters. You've got the carotid artery in the throat. If you hit that carotid artery, they're going to bleed out. If you hit them in the upper arm, like in the armpit or inside of the upper arm, that's the brachial artery. Again, big artery, you're going to bleed out. Hit them in the groin or in the inside thigh. You hit those arteries there, they will bleed out. So I would be, instead of trying to shoot center mass and get through that thick breastbone, I would be shooting for large artery clusters personally.
Yeah. I'm not saying I don't want to, you know, I'm not, you know, encouraging people to kill them. I'm just saying if you
No,
had to,
definitely not.
if to protect yourself, if you ever were an incident, you know, in a, you know, having an issue there where something tried to attack you or whatever, you had to protect yourself. So, but I
If I'm
did.
close enough where I'm using a handgun, I'm probably going to put the entire magazine in its throat.
Yeah. It's funny you said the underarm because somebody had said, I don't remember where I heard this, but this was quite a while ago. I heard that they thought their heart was located under their arm. I don't know where I heard that or how I heard that, but somebody had said if you're going to kill them, you have to hit for under the arm. And you just said there's a main artery there, so that might be why, you know,
Yeah, I
they were
don't think their
thinking that.
heart would be under their arm. That just goes against physiology of
Yeah.
any mammal.
Yeah.
But
But that
there's a large
explains that.
artery right there under the arm. And one thing we learned in law enforcement is that our body armor does not necessarily protect you on that side. And body armor would work the same as a very thick rib cage. If you hit somebody from the side, that bullet's going into a lot more dangerous territory for you than it would if they hit directly from the front, because it might deflect
Right.
off the breastbone. But going in from the side, you can do a lot of damage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting though. That would explain then why the underarm was mentioned. And I thought, well, maybe that's just a, you know, an area. And then you said the arteries. I thought, well, that might be what it is. I think somebody had taken one or had claimed to take one down and said that they had hit under the arm or something. It was just one of those things you heard a story of. So.
Well, the inside of the upper arm is the brachial plexus. And that artery is one of your major arteries. I mean, you will lose a lot of
Yeah.
blood on an upper arm shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. What I was told was that it would take like a 50 millimeter or caliber gun to take one down. So I didn't know if that.
I don't think it would necessarily take one that big.
Okay.
Of course, you know, 50 caliber round would probably punch the breastbone or the skull, because that's a powerful round. But if you don't, if you can't afford, you know, buying a 50 caliber sniper's rifle, which none of us can, I mean, I don't have $12,000 to drop down on a gun. If you're limited to the budget of what you can afford to carry, it becomes about shot placement. And at that point, if you're seriously in fear of your life, try to take a deep breath and aim carefully and hit those large arteries. Because one of the things they taught us in the law enforcement academy is that cops are trained marksmen. We are trained to put lead on target in extreme situations. But even trained cops, when under fire, their marksmanship drops to less than 10%. So you can imagine a person that doesn't have that training, they may not hit the target at all.
I know.
So
I know.
Take a deep breath and make sure you're hitting your target and try to hit those big arteries.
Especially if you're toting a large caliber gun too. That would be, you know, the kickback and stuff. Do you think some of this, the forest fires that are going on, do you think there's any kind of a connection to this?
Yeah. I don't know if there's a connection to cryptids per se, but I know it will definitely affect them. I mean, look how any large forest fire will force large predators and everything, all the animals in the area out. If we've got an area where you're seeing a lot of forest fire or a lot of damage going on from, say, landslides, you're going to see large predators in areas they aren't normally at.
I know.
I definitely look for strange behaviors among animals in your area. But you've really, and if you're concerned, you've got a cryptid in your area, you've really got to check and see if it really hits the big three. There's got to be habitat for them. There's got to be water for them. And, you know, there's got to be game. If you're in an area where you don't see a lot of deer, you're probably not going to see a lot of Sasquatch. Because I think that's, you know, I think large ungulates are one of their primary sources of food. So if you don't have a lot of game or a lot of water in your area, I'd say large predators like that are going to be scarce.
I live on a road up here. We had a Bigfoot sighting up here. I guess it was in the paper back in the 80s. But it's, like I said, it's perfect area for, you know, Sasquatch to live. But you wonder if one's already been here. Then they, you know, who knows if they're here. But I don't know. It'd be interesting. Well, I had fun talking to you. I really did. This was great. I'm glad
you got to answer. I really enjoyed it.
Did you? I'm glad. Yeah. Cause I had so many questions for you and you know, just do me a favor. If you run into any more stuff, you got to make sure you get a hold of me.
Absolutely.
Cause I would love to have you back on. Maybe you and Nick sometime can come on together. That would be fun. So
yeah, I would definitely do it. Nick's a hoot and a half, and he's got a lot of good stories.
I know he does. He was fun. I gotta get a hold of him again. Well, thanks, D. I really appreciate this.
Not a problem. Anytime. Thanks for reaching out.
Oh, sure. You have a great night, hon.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Aw. Hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight. I had a really good time talking to DA, and I'm hoping to have him back on the show again soon at some point. You guys have a wonderful evening or day wherever you are. God bless you all. Stay safe, and I'll be talking to you soon. Take care.